Welcome to Movie Maniacs, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
All right, everybody, we are back with another edition of Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags and Chuck Curry doing it all over again. Lots to get to today. We've got some movie news on the way. I'll let you know my thoughts on In the Heights. I got a chance to see it with my daughter this past week. And also, we lost one of the great character actors of all time this past week, Ned Beatty. And we're going to go through his career every step of the way from 1972 on. And, you know, he's one of those character actors that it's fun to do a show like this, Chuck, because he's been in so many different movies and so many different roles. We're probably going to be talking about a lot of movies we haven't brought up in quite some time. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. But let's bring him in now. Chuck, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Mike. How you doing?
Good, good. Another busy show ahead. And, you know, you got a chance to see In the Heights last week. And my daughter and I sat down for it. Debated going to the theaters to go see it, but my AMC stock's doing so well, they don't need me to go to the theaters right now. So we decided to watch
really?
It.
Really? Okay.
We decided to watch it on HBO Max, and we had a fun time doing it. Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, so you copped out. Okay, I understand.
I did cop out. Show times weren't that great, so we couldn't get out.
Understood. I'll give you a pass this week.
She had a blast watching this movie, Chuck. She loved it. She called it her favorite music of all time. That she
really
tends to do that right after seeing a musical. So
okay,
Mamma Mia has been her favorite music of all time at some
Greatest
point.
Greatest Showman
was her favorite musical at some time. So
okay,
yeah, she's got
you know, it's interesting. You're gonna laugh at on my 65 inch 4K at the, you know, the ice cream parlor.
I've been watching that, huh?
I evidently it's not a unique thing. Having said that, I've been watching The Greatest Showman on Disney Plus. I put it on. I rotate. Like, I just finished watching Twister again, daily. And
Did it change?
No, it's always the same.
Okay.
That's the polarizing, that's the perplexing thing about movies. They never really change, unless they do a director's cut, of course.
Right.
But The Greatest Showman is very entertaining.
The songs in that movie
are really good.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Really,
and I would
good.
Say, you know, the great thing about In the Heights is there's two or three fantastic songs, and there's an awful lot of I don't want to call them forgettable songs, but hard to sing along to.
Yeah, listen, it's not West Side Story, like I said last week.
No, but it's
an
very enjoyable
cast and a solid message, and the bookend, which I love the bookend aspect of it.
It
had a powerful payoff.
It does. And
tell
me
about it. What do you think?
It does. I did, like you said last week, I love the message that it has about, you know, be careful wishing you were going to leave your hometown, because there's a reason why you call it home. And most of those people realize how great, you know, Washington Heights is. And it did bring back a lot of great memories of, you know, growing up very early age in New York City as well.
And, me too.
It just has that familial feel to it. That is the type of message that we do need throughout this society. And it's sad to see that Lin-Manuel, you know, he's dealing with some controversy because he didn't get Latin enough in the film.
It's absurd.
I don't know what these people wanted. I mean, some of the songs you can't even understand because it's all Spanish. And I mean, the cast is authentic, and I guess there wasn't enough, Black Latins in it. I don't know, Chuck. It's just exhausting to try to keep up with, you know, the woke police.
This movement is just, they're stretching the rubber band, and they're stretching the rubber band, and is breaking the rubber band, and then stretching the broken rubber band. And this is just beyond the pale, Mike. It's just, not only annoying, it's gotten pathetic on when it gets to this level.
Yeah, it's tiresome. It really is. And, you know, this goes back to what I've been talking about years upon years upon years about what's wrong with Hollywood right now. This is everything wrong with it. And if you can attack a movie like this, then you can basically attack any movie, every movie, anytime you want. So
I got to tell you, I am worried when Spielberg's West Side Story hits theaters December 10th, leading up with the lead in that movie, because he was a little bit in the Me Too movement.
guilty Baby of Driver came out.
Charged with nothing.
Yeah.
But and if you listen to his side of the story, I mean, I think he was like 20 years old. She was 17, consensual. And, you know, they're going to make a big deal of it. They're going to target. It's almost like a game. It's like, you know, like Bill Maher said on his show last night, it's like a dog, like making it crawl. It's like, yeah, they get enjoyment out of making a dog crawl.
Yep. Yep.
Just for the sake of it.
But, you know, back to the movie, I liked it a lot. It's a solid three-star musical, and the leads are great, and it has a really good message, like you said. There's no complaints I would have.
And it's
at
very
all.
Respectful of the, you know, elder generation in culture, no yeah, doubt. And,
yep, absolutely, absolutely. Especially the elder grandmother character in that film, too. And she's very good. I never got to see it on Broadway. It would have been fun to see, but it's a great movie, and it's a great watch on TV as well.
Now, let me ask a question, because I don't want to dwell. This doesn't make a movie not good or good, but the box office was not what they anticipated. I think it did 11.4, number two behind A Quiet Place, which was a surprise number one for weekend number three. Now, nobody knows how much viewership HBO Max takes away, because it was day to day. Listen, my gut feeling is, yeah, this movie probably is not going to have a lot of interest in Iowa. You know, I think it's a more Northeast type of movie.
It is. And not only Northeast, but red or blue. I mean, you're going, it's all blue. I mean, not too many reds are going to be watching this movie either, Chuck. That's part of the problem, too. We're so separated in this society, and culturally and politically.
Yeah.
I could see so many, you know, people on the right saying, I'm not going to, why am I watching that? Why do I want to feel good about my family and sing along and dance and watch all the great choreography? And
you know,
watch
politics aside, I remember growing up, there used to be a time where you cared for your neighbor when you said,
absolutely,
how you doing? When they walked up, when a stranger walked down the block, you'd say, you know what? Hello.
Yeah.
What's happened to that?
I don't know, Chuck. We've gotten so far away from that. And I do want to point out the best part of that movie, the greatest scene of that movie, is the dance scene along the building, and the song is towards the end of the film. It's done so well.
And I must say, the juice of that movie for me, well, it's really the bodega owner, young bodega owner, and the girl he meets.
Yeah.
And their chemistry. She brings the movie alive a lot in that 2 hour and 22 minute running time.
Which I thought moved pretty quickly, as a matter of fact, too. And I do want to do one more plug. I got a chance to start watching the Apple Plus series Physical with great performance by Rose Byrne after episode one. A frustrated housewife.
She's worked a lot in the last 10 years.
Yeah,
huh?
She's very good. Frustrated housewife in the mid-80s who starts her own, what do you call it? The jazzercise and explodes. And I'm really looking forward. You know, they took Glow off the air, which was one of my favorite guilty pleasures from harken back to the mid 80s. This hopefully will take its place. So if you get a chance, it's on Apple Plus, and it's Rose Byrne in Physical. It's playing now. I think three episodes are out, and I think there's five more to come. So I wanted to plug that. You get a chance to see or watch anything over the last week or so?
Nothing. No, well, I did watch episode 10 of Big Shots, the John Stamos show on Disney Plus. I got to tell you, Mike, This is a really nice arc. If you want, listen, people in the audience, if you want something to watch with your children, family show, with a tweak of an edge, even on Disney Plus, this show's good. I mean, Stamos is good. The cast is nice. It had a nice seasonal arc. In episode 10,
it's over. It's done.
Well, I think this is the first season is over. I think it'll get renewed, but I got to tell you, his arc was so good, it doesn't need a renewal. I thought it was a self-sustaining storyline from episode A to 1 to 10. I thought it worked. It was nice. I liked it.
Well, there you go. John Stamos can start clearing off his mantle, because he's going to have some Emmys up there
soon.
Well,
I don't know about that.
Well, hey, no, listen, if from your word, from your mouth to God's ears for him. I'm pulling for him. You know, he never got recognized for his work on Full House. So I'm
and he was also on ER in the last few seasons. I don't know if you know that. If you remember that.
I know, yeah.
Watch ER, by the way?
I loved ER, yeah.
I loved ER, too.
I stopped.
You know, I have a saying, you know, when I go in for a haircut, I usually hand the beautician who does my hair, he gives me a haircut, a picture of George Clooney. And she says, I said, then here's a picture of Noah Wiley. She says, I could do that. No?
You might want to give him a picture. Picture of William H. Macy or something like that instead.
No.
I can get the Anthony Edwards look, but I don't know about you.
I think I could.
All right, Chuck, let's talk some movie news. And some interesting things came down the pike over the last couple of days, including one you texted me. Do we need a Greenland sequel? We're going to get one.
Yeah, I mean, that's done for money. This is a, from what I read, the production company STX, which has been around for a while now, produced Greenland, and they cut numerous deals. It came out during COVID. It was a $35 million production budget. They didn't really put it, they put it in a few theaters, a handful of, they didn't know, I think it was like 600 theaters. It wasn't a huge marketing campaign, but they put it on streaming, and they cut a deal for like $50 million with HBO Max. So they wound up netting, from what I read, between a $60 and $80 million profit off that movie. And when you do that, you usually say, hey, let's make a sequel. So they're getting the original cast back, Gerard Butler and Marissa Barone?
Marina Baccarin.
Right. I was close. Okay. But
John and Allison Garrity, by the way.
I thought they were good leads in that movie.
They were.
I enjoyed that movie. It was very character-driven for a disaster film. So it sort of surprised me because I was expecting a lot more action, but it's very character-driven, and I liked it.
I did too.
I don't know how they'll do a sequel, but I guess they'll figure something out.
Yeah, it's going to continue the story of the Garrity family. Just,
yes.
It'll add to the plethora of great roles of
I guess we Gerard got more Butler. Media. I guess we got more meteors on the way, huh?
We do have more meteors and more Gerard Butler films. And by the way, Night Has Fallen is in the works right now, Chuck. So the fourth installment of the Fallen films.
Well, one was so well received. It was.
It actually was better than it should have been. I have to admit, I enjoyed that film as much as I cannot stand Gerard Butler.
No, wait, time out here.
Come on.
You haven't warmed up a little.
I mean, I give you credit where credit's due. Greenland was good, and I said that was better than it should have been. I mean, that's not good enough. By no means are they good or not good because of him.
No, I understand, but I got some movie news. Last week, I sent you a text after we aired. I forgot to mention a reference of Beyond the Poseidon Adventure, and then this week I get a pleasant surprise news that Shout Factory is going to do a Beyond the Poseidon Adventure Blu-ray.
Wow.
Which means a lot of bells and whistles.
Holy
Mike. Christmas has come early, no?
Is there an audio commentary by Shirley Knight?
I hope so.
Is an audio commentary by Telly Savalas' grandchild?
I gotta tell you, the DVD looks really good. It's a good transfer. So, you know, considering the sets that show shiny and new, even though, you know, the Poseidon was supposed to be on its last voyage because, rusty, old-looking ship, I'll never understand Irwin Allen, the production design. Like, what was he like? I'd love to know, because we talked about this before on the show.
Ad nauseum.
Okay. He's like a George Steinbrenner of Hollywood director producers, right? He's very, very into it, like a mad genius as a producer, has a huge hit with the Poseidon Adventure 72, huge hit with Towering Inferno 74. Guy's on top of the mountain, right? Mm-hmm. And then he says to himself, I want to do more. I want to direct my own movies. And then he does a Swarm and it gets critically bombasted and it bombs. And then he does Beyond the Poseidon Adventure and it bombs. And then he does When Time Ran Out and it bombs. And didn't he get, he just shouldn't have been in the director's chair.
Yeah. Well, you know, these guys have egos and visions. They're going to, it's all
plus
their baby.
The scripts that he greenlit with those three movies, he had no idea how silliness of those, some of those characters. It's like,
well, the problem is he put together a concept and cast before putting anything on paper. And that's where everything fell apart. So, you look at Poseidon Adventure and Towering Inferno, they're both based on, other material. And that's probably what helps out those films.
Very true. But I got to tell you, which, I can watch Beyond the Poseidon Adventure sort of as a Saturday morning adventure movie.
Well,
I know the supporting characters are silly, but I do like Michael Caine, Sally Field, and Carl Malden. If you remove Telly Savalas and some of the silly characters, that movie's decent.
And when you say some of the silly characters, you mean every single one besides those three.
Pretty much so.
Except maybe Mark Harmon. Chuck, let's move on to another movie news. Toxic Avenger reboot. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago.
Why is this attracting so much talent?
I don't know. Kevin Bacon signed on. He's going to be the villain in it.
I know. And I just Elijah Wood is signed on now for a part.
I think there's a cult you know, following to this movie. A lot of these people.
Well, you remember that. You remember the video boxes back. Oh, yeah. Right?
I mean, it's you know,
trauma.
And it's bad, but it's good. So hopefully, yeah. I wonder if they'll just go with the cheese effect or just try to make it a really good movie. Will they get the tone of the original movie, or are they going to try to make it something new?
I think you have to a point. No.
Pretty much. Yeah, I would think so. And I did see a Bullet Train, Brad Pitt's movie got a release date, and it's April 8th, 2022.
Now who's in that beside him again?
Joey King's in it. Who else is in this movie? A couple other stars. It'll be good to see Brad Pitt in that type of film. You know, he hasn't done much in quite some time, especially in the action department.
I was looking at the box office totals, right, 2 weeks ago. They actually re-released World War Z in like a couple hundred theaters. Why that one?
I don't know. I think there's some people that like that movie. I didn't think it was actually that bad. It was just edited too much. I actually like the back half.
You know, I love the zombie genre. That movie just doesn't work for me, even though I like him in it.
Yeah.
CGI is not good. It has its moments, but I think it was butchered in the editing room.
It just seems like the post-production is where it all fell apart.
Well, because what's his name? Jack from Lost, right? His whole part.
Matthew Fox.
His whole part is on the cutting room floor, except for like two seconds.
Yeah, I know. It's really weird. If you blink, you're like, why would they put Matthew Fox in that role? And then you understand.
Well,
we
know why.
Well, Chuck, the last thing I wanted to bring up was the movie releases this week. Now, you have a Wednesday movie release, which hasn't happened in quite some time. The Hitman's Wife Bodyguard came out, so that's the sequel to a movie that I hated. You've got Kevin Hart's Fatherhood debuting on Netflix. Pixar's new movie is on Disney Plus called Luca. So all three of these movies, the latter two, not even going to be in theaters. So the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
What are the reviews for the Pixar movie?
Mostly decent. You know, it's
okay. So now why couldn't they help the theaters out and put that in theaters? Why?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Come on. Here's the thing. The people are starting to go back to the movies to an extent. But the problem is going to be the product's not enough. Right.
Well, that's the, you know,
you
and I've gotten
a lot more product.
You know, I used to have the AMC Stubs and they keep asking me to, you know, activate it again. And I look at the lineup of movies coming out and I'm not going to do it. And I think that's part of the problem. The product, like you said, F9's not going to make me do it. Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard's not going to make me do it. I'm not going to the theaters to see those movies. So I don't know, Chuck. It's the same thing with Tomorrow War is going right to Amazon. I mean, that movie they couldn't figure out a way to get that in the theaters. It's got Chris Pratt in it, for crying out loud. I mean,
they really needed to figure out, because unless the studios just like, I mean, you got to realize some of these studios like Universal's had 100-year relationships with these theaters.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they're in the ocean, right? They're grasping for air. They got a straw in their mouth with the top of the straw, you know, breathing so they could get a few sucks of oxygen, and nobody's throwing them a life preserver.
Yeah. It's weird because Jungle Cruise and Black Widow are still getting released in theaters as well. I don't know why.
Day to day, though.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Having said that, not enough people are going to care about paying $29.99 in Disney Plus. They will. They're going to go to the movies to see those movies.
Well, right. And Pixar's Luca is with the service. You don't have to pay extra for it either.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, which is really weird. So maybe it's just a smaller movie. I don't know. I'll probably watch it this weekend and figure it out. So the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. Zero. I mean, I haven't heard any buzz on it, and whether or not it's going to make any money this weekend.
It's on target to do, I think, about 20 million over 5 days.
Yeah, that's not nearly enough. I don't know. His other movie, actually.
Well, the first one wasn't that big.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. No.
And let's be honest. You take away, and I like him. He's a guy's got talent. Ryan Reynolds, and he's had a good career. But if you take away, Deadpool. He's not a big box office attraction.
No.
Despite the fact he's really talented and he's really entertaining in commercials.
He is. And he's very good. He's very good looking. And
he's been around now for like 20 years, right?
I think A Free Guy might actually do well. I have a feeling that one's going to do well. It's got a really good new trailer to it. I think that's going to be another hit for
him.
It's
a shame. He bounced back with Deadpool. He made a lot. He resurrected his career and he got big paychecks, but he was, you know, Green Lantern could have been good, but that movie's just bad. He met his wife on that movie.
Well, too much CGI in that movie.
That movie just unravels into something horrible as it goes on. It's bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's so bad that they totally ignore it for DC time, and when they're doing all the other movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's that bad.
I got a couple things. Can we talk about
what do you got? Yeah, go.
This week in movie history, Grease was released in theaters. 1978 went on to become the number one grossing film of that year. Number two was Superman, the movie. What's interesting, and people may not know this, John Travolta was 24 years old when he shot that movie, and Olivia Newton-John was 30 when it was released.
Right. It's crazy.
I mean, they're playing high school, which you can, but he handpicked. Here's the deal. Travolta was red hot or Saturday Night Fever because that movie made a fortune for Paramount. Right. So he got to basically call his own shots. He handpicked her. And originally, you know, her character, Sandy, is not from Australia. And they couldn't get her to lose the Australian accent because she really wasn't an actress. So they wrote the fact that she was in Australia. He went to Australia on vacation and they met. So that made it easier for her to perform in the movie.
You interpret that movie as he's on vacation in Australia?
She
was already in town and came.
Exactly. It's been a while. having said that, I thought she did a great job in that movie.
Oh yeah, she's America's sweetheart from not even being in America. I think she's great in that movie. Yeah, absolutely. That's a 78. I was 8 years old. I remember walking up to the ticket booth and my dad buying tickets. I'm like, why are we seeing this movie about a bunch of teenagers in the 50s? Why is he taking us to this movie? And it lives
let me
in
tell you
infinite.
Something. In my neighborhood back in the day in 78, that movie was so popular, played at the Avenue Movie Theater in Brooklyn. A lot of the people I knew in the neighborhood would go back and see that over and over. Mm-hmm. And I knew people who saw that movie 40, 50 times in a theater. Yeah. No exaggeration.
Let me ask you something. Would it play well in the smoothie shop on a 65-inch?
I think it would.
Yeah,
4K? I think it would.
Okay, good.
I think, well, here's my lineup that I've been playing. I always play Batman Begins. I've been playing Twister all the time. And I got to tell you something about Twister. Twister came out 25 years ago, right? Originally, I think they wanted Tom Cruise as the lead in that movie. And then maybe Tom Hanks. That's what I read. Bill Paxton would be better than both. I'm telling you, Bill Paxton was born for that movie. There's something about him. He hit that zenith of his whatever, his ability to do leading man. He was him and Helen Hunt were fantastic. She got top billing in the movie, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
But that movie holds up beautifully as a popcorn entertainment Twister. It really does.
Yeah, it has a lot of flaws, but
But having said that, it has a great score, right? The movie moves. It has the only part, the only thing about that, Jamie Gertz's character.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's an insult to women. No.
Yeah. It's not a good character.
I mean, I almost feel bad for her performance in that film because she's playing a ridiculous character.
Yeah, it's not
she's
a good character.
She's pretty pathetic.
And she's getting a lot of screen time in it, too. So we've talked about Twister too much. What else do you have?
I know you're not going to mention this in birthdays, but, you know, Roger Ebert was born this week. I think it was 1942. And I was thinking about, you know, the influence Roger Ebert and and we've talked about this before, the influence those two had, who started on a show, a PBS show called Sneak Previews, and then it morphed into At the Movies. And, we both go on YouTube once in a while and watch some of those older reviews.
It's
and
a rabbit
really,
hole you'll
so
never
cool.
get out of once
and
you're in.
And it brings back such great memories. I remember, like, in 89, I couldn't wait for the review of Batman. And one liked it. One gave it thumbs up. Ebert gave it thumbs down. Siskel gave it thumbs up. And I remember their early review. Remember they used to have early reviews of Titanic back in 97?
Yeah.
I so miss that, Mike.
Yeah. I used to love their Dogs of the Week, too. The dog would jump up on the chair. But the cool thing is you can find all the old
videos.
The show
was so well done.
It was well done. And, you know, Gene got sick towards the end. And then Richard Roper came on. And
He did a really good job.
But it kind of just didn't have the same feel. And then Roger started getting sick. It was just like, but it really holds up. And it's a rabbit hole. If you go start watching them, you won't stop.
Remember they brought in the guest hosts and they had Kevin Smith did one. And then he brought in Harry Knowles. Remember Harry Knowles of Any Cool News. And if you read about that guy's backstory.
Yeah.
Holy smoke.
No, that was fun. And there's a great documentary, Roger Ebert, too, that was well done. If you get a chance to watch it, it's really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, what he endured in the last few years, boy, oh boy.
I mean, he lost the lower half of his face.
I know he did.
I mean, it was really scary to look at.
Rough stuff.
Yeah, really rough stuff. But a great career and a great
When I think about the memories that show brings back, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Remember the rampage they would go on slasher films in the early 80s? They used to just tear those movies apart over and over again. It's
funny because some movies, they're like completely off. One gave a thumbs down to Die Hard. Like, I mean, really?
Yeah,
and then they both gave thumbs up to Speed 2.
I know.
How can you give a thumbs down to Die Hard and a thumbs up to Speed 2? But everything's subjective, right?
It is. Or some might argue everything was paid for by the head of the production department and said, hey, guys, would you mind for a couple extra $1,000 giving this a good review?
You think they did that?
Oh, I have a feeling they probably did, Chuck, to get a thumbs up on a movie poster.
Well, if you look at, on my Facebook page, right? I'm on one of the groups. It's like movie newspaper clippings, right? And then you see different movies and you see like there used to be a guy I think it was a Los Angeles or something, and when everybody else gave the movie a horrible review, he always gave it a rave.
And
he was clearly paid.
Yeah,
I mean, and some of these weren't even real names,
like, or really fake. Yeah, or not just a person. It's just
some would be just raves, and I was like, okay. Like, I mean, I just read one yesterday that popped up on my Facebook page when Red Heat with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Belushi.
Jim Belushi.
Oh, you know, Jim Belushi's amazing. Arnold Schwarzenegger's best movie. I mean, the movie's watchable, but no, it's not Arnold Schwarzenegger's best movie. And Jim Belushi wasn't amazing. I mean, it was okay, but like, there was some real over-reviewing.
Well, very much so. Well, they wanted to get the headline. Nothing mattered more than two thumbs up or two big thumbs up. That's all anybody wanted to see. Right. And that's really the only thing you needed on a movie poster.
I mean, it's funny because I was talking about this on my radio spot yesterday. Like Joel Siegel on Good Morning America, Gene Shalit on Today. I remember Pat Collins on Channel 9 out in New York. Remember Dennis Cunningham, CBS Channel 2?
Dennis Cunningham hated everything.
He'd do a 1 to 10. I remember Dennis Cunningham gave Batman a 9 out of 10. I was so excited. I remember way back in the day, I go back to Beyond a Poseidon Adventure before me and my father ready to go see it at the Kingsway Theater. He gives it a 1. And I'm like, oh boy, that ain't good.
He was pretty accurate. Yeah. I like Jeffrey Lyons. Jeffrey Lyons was a good one too.
He was good. He was on
NBC.
WPIX.
Yeah, oh, and MPIX.
Then he went to NBC. Those days are over. There are no movie critics now, right? They don't do that. Did they do that on Good Morning America or Today? They review
remember
movies.
Gene Shalit used to come on with his stupid puns, and they don't.
I liked him as an entertaining guy, but he over reviewed.
Well, he became bigger than the movies. It was about him, not the movies. Those days are over. I mean, there's no, whatever.
Fun topic to talk about.
Good times. Definitely good memories. All right. Let's get to Fast Five and some interesting names in there before we get to Ned Beatty's career. We'll start with, Kathleen Turner, who's on the Kominsky Project the last season I'm watching now on Netflix with Michael Douglas. And it's just amazing to me. It just does not seem like the same person to me anymore.
How old is she now?
She is 67 years old this weekend. And the amount of great roles she had early on, and it's just, it's mind-boggling. I don't want to get into it. Let's just pick, you think of Kathleen Turner, you think which film?
I guess Romancing the Stone.
Joan Wilder?
I mean, I always said that the movie she did with Michael Douglas with Danny DeVito, what was that called? About marriage.
The War of the Roses.
War of the Roses.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real dark comedy.
The most depressing ending of a movie ever. Yeah. She did some great work in, Peggy
Sue
Got Married.
She's in Body Heat too, right?
Body Heat. Peggy Sue Got Married. I know a lot of people like that time travel movie.
Let's be honest. A movie like Body Heat was a big hit back in the day. It gains no traction in 2021.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Remember V.R. Warshawski? That was going to be her, her cop that just didn't based on the novels. But a terrific talent. I remember Serial Mom was probably one of the last things I saw.
Yeah, that was a John Waters movie.
Yeah,
right?
John Waters, funny movie.
Yeah.
How about, we talked about him last week with Great Dads, John Goodman. Let's, try.
I got to tell you what pops in my mind. Arachnophobia, the exterminator. I mean, he adds so much to that movie.
Yep. And to me, nobody says nerds better than he did in Revenge of the Nerds.
And that's a classic. That is a classic movie.
He's great as the partner for Al Pacino in Sea of Love.
Sure is.
He's real good in that. He's just so great in everything. It's hard to pick one.
And then 10 Cloverfield Lane,
He carries that movie.
He's really good in that.
Yeah, he's great. And, of course, he's carrying Roseanne now. Well, not even – what's it called? The Bonners now?
The Connors.
Let's move on to Josh Lucas. Chuck, seems like we brought him up a lot lately.
How old is Josh?
He is 50 this weekend. Still relatively young.
Yeah. So he did. He did Poseidon in 2005. He was 33.
32. 34.
Oh, 34. Could have been. He had a Paul Newman type look.
Yeah, but you think him, you think of that, right?
I do, because you know I love Poseidon.
Do you like that? I got to say, the movie with Reese Witherspoon, right? I mean, Sweet Home Alabama. I mean, that's his movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I
would you like that basketball movie he did, based on the Kentucky game? What was the name of that movie?
I don't remember. I know what you're talking about. I didn't see the whole thing.
Yeah. Glory Road, right? Glory
Road. Yeah. I thought he did good work on the TV show The Firm based on the movie. I enjoyed that.
And of course, he's in the new Purge movie that comes out in a couple
of
weeks.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. How about Nicole Kidman, who is forever beautiful and always great? I loved her since Dead Calm. She's
Moulin Rouge.
54. Yeah, Moulin Rouge is a good one. Real good one, actually. That might be the one that pops into my mind, too. Moulin Rouge.
I like her in Australia.
She's good in that.
I know that movie's flawed to death, but there's something about it. I like their pairing. I like her in it. I like that movie.
I like the lesser seen movie, The Interpreter. I thought she was decent in that. That was a Sidney Pollack movie with Sean Penn. I thought that was done very well.
Yeah. You know, speaking of her, because I we were just talking about director's cuts. There's a story in Variety about the possibility that, well, there's a fact that a director's cut of a much darker cut of Batman Forever exists by Joel Schumacher.
Well, Dr. Chase Meridian, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
And the question is, will Warner Brothers release the darker cut of Batman Forever?
No.
I think they will eventually.
Will anybody care?
I think they will. I'd watch it.
Okay.
I watched it. I got to tell you, I watched it. The 25th anniversary was the other day. So I watched it on the 65-inch 4K.
Oy vey, with this TV.
I mean, it doesn't hold up well.
And it's not the TV's fault. We know that.
I liked it when I originally saw it in theaters. I was enjoyable.
Right.
It the campiness feels more than it ever did.
Well, and I also have to point out that she's very good in our last two series that she did, The Undoing.
She's had an amazing career.
And
she works. She's still writing her own. She's still writing her own. And also, we talked about this on the show. I love that movie Invasion. I know.
Yeah.
You know, they changed directors for the last act. They brought in the Wachowskis to finish the last act of that movie. And so a German director did a very character driven Invasion of the Body Snatchers type storyline where they really had some interesting points on antidepressants and people being described all these drugs to make their mood stable. I like that movie a lot, and she's awesome in that movie. And Daniel Craig is super likable in a supporting role. Her love interest in that movie. People who haven't seen The Invasion, if you like Invasion to the Body Snatchers, don't listen to some of the reviews. That movie's really good.
I think so. I also thought she was great in the movie Lion, which came out about 5 years ago, too. That's a fantastic film. Get a chance to see that. She plays the mom of Dev Patel, who's trying to find his real mom. It's really good movie. It was one of the best movies of the year that year. And last but not least, it's Chris Pratt, Chuck, who is really, he's one of my favorites that's out right now. He doesn't really work that much. He's 42 years old.
He's 42.
You know, obviously his signature roles in Guardians of the Galaxy and the Jurassic World movies. Pete Quill.
I would go with Guardians of the Galaxy, but the movie he did with Jennifer Lawrence, I actually enjoy that
Passengers.
Movie. Yeah, I do. I enjoy it. I like sci-fi.
Yeah,
and I liked it.
but it just goes off.
The movie doesn't have to be great to be good.
Yeah, but it goes off the rails at the end. I mean, where the direction they went with that movie is.
You think they had some? There was probably some studio tampering with that.
Yeah, that was a tough. And I loved his work on Parks and Recreation too.
How do you think Jurassic World would have played out if Josh Brolin was the lead because he was supposed to?
I mean, I think it would have been fine. He seems a little too old for that role.
Maybe and a little too serious.
A little too serious.
Funny too, though. But
I did like his Magnificent Seven. I thought it was a totally underrated movie too. He's very good in that, opposite Denzel Washington. He holds his own in that film, Chuck. And that's another good Chris Pratt movie.
And what's interesting about Chris Pratt is he's a prime example. He got himself in great shape and then morphed into a completely different career.
Yeah. And he's very, very, very likable.
Oh, he is.
Extreme, even, the divorce from one of my favorite actresses, they've both survived that and moved on. I thought they were going to be a Hollywood couple for a while.
I can't imagine a better casting than him as Quill in Guardians.
No, it's really good. And he's really good as Owen, too, in the Jurassic World movies.
Yeah.
Even the second one, which is extremely flawed, he helps that movie out a lot. Speaking of helping movies,
that movie will play a lot better in a trilogy, though.
Yeah, maybe. It'd be play a lot better if it wasn't called Jurassic World. But let's move on to Ned Beatty, who, let's face it, I mean, you say Ned Beatty to the average moviegoer, and they might not know who the hell you're talking about. But he passed away this past week at the age of 83. The minute you show a picture of Ned Beatty, then everybody knows who the heck he is.
Otisburg.
I mean, I'm like, when I heard he died, I immediately went to that scene and that movie and his role. And we'll get to it in a second. A lot of people go back to his first movie, Chuck, which came out 50 years ago.
Hard to believe
Deliverance is his first movie, but Deliverance was his first movie.
I want to talk about Deliverance.
By the way, can I just say he was 35 when he was in that? He was 35 years old in Deliverance.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing about Deliverance. That movie was a big box office hit back in 71, right? No, 73? What was it?
1972.
Okay, 72. Same year as Godfather and Poseidon Adventure, right? That movie packed theaters for a long time. Let's be honest, Mike. I don't see how that movie plays at all to a mass audience. I think that movie was unleashed on an unsuspecting public. I don't think they had any idea what they were getting into when they walked into a theater to see that movie. That movie is one of the scariest, most petrifying films of all time. It feels beyond real. How he did that as his first movie was amazing. I mean,
squeal like a pig. I mean,
his character. What happens to his character in that movie?
It's terrible.
Beyond frightening. And it's so great. It's so real. It's so real. Those hillbillies.
I can't, and you bring up a good point. I can't imagine how a movie like that plays today.
It would not. There's no way that movie plays.
For some reason, I feel like half the audience might be rooting for the,
hope not.
For the other side to win.
No, there is no way that movie plays like it did back in 72.
Two things it did, obviously, it started his career. And then, of course, it really launched Burt Reynolds. And not only that, but those two would work together a lot.
Ronnie Cox first movie too.
Yeah, Ronnie Cox as well. But he would be in a lot of Burt Reynolds movies, including White Lightning.
Right. Obviously, they connected on the set.
Obviously they did. And he'd go on through and he's always playing these same kind of characters. He's just a likable guy on the
big screen. Reynolds saves the day in that movie, how cathartic is that for the audience?
It's really good. He team up again with Burt Reynolds, not only with White Lightning, but WW and the Dixie Dance Kings. I mean, we're not making classic movies here with Burt Reynolds. He's in Nashville as well, plus Delbert Reese in that film. I remember him too, Chuck. Remember The Deadly Tower with Kurt Russell?
Yeah, it was a really good TV movie.
Yeah, he plays the cop in that movie too. I remember he did a lot of great work on TV.
That was one of the most critically acclaimed TV movies in its era.
Absolutely. Really done well. And then he pops up in, well, first he's in All the President's Men, and that is one of the more amazing casts of all time. But he's also in here's a guy who does The Big Bus, All the President's Men, and Gator all in the same year. And then he follows it up with Silver Streak and Network, Chuck. Network. He got nominated for Network, as a matter of fact. But think about it. All the President's Men, The Big Bus, Gator, Network and Silver Streak all released in 1976.
A lot of directors wanted his services, right?
Well, yeah, because he's going to deliver a solid performance,
yep.
Be very recognizable and likable.
Yeah.
Even when he's not playing a very, you know, the good guy, he's still a good guy.
Yeah.
And I remember him in Silver Streak as one of the pursuers of Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. Very enjoyable film. But talk about Network, because he's not in it a lot.
No.
He's in it about 5 minutes of screen time, and he got an Oscar nomination.
He has that long dialogue scene at the table, right?
Yeah, yep, yep. Best supporting actor in a role.
And it's like a visionary conversation he's having.
Absolutely.
Right, and about the future of the way people will watch television.
It's unbelievable, and it's a great, even if you just watch that scene. And what's crazy about that movie is that five actors got nominated for best for Oscars in that.
And
actors.
I've always said, if you want to see some amazing acting in that movie, William Holden's performance in that movie is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. They're all great. I mean, they're all
and
great.
And of course, I'm mad as hell, and I'm gonna Peter Finch is just. I mean, that's one of the great characters of all time in any film.
Well, you talk about movies that don't hold up. That movie still plays up, would play today. Without a doubt.
The interesting part about Network, I don't want to go on a tangent, but it relates so well to what's going on today. Certain people who were doing nightly monologues on cable networks, they should know better than what they're saying.
Yeah.
They know they're not telling the truth,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Yep.
And they're doing it anyway because they're being fed a ton of money to do it.
Yep.
And it's not right.
Nope. And this, what a visionary movie. What a visionary movie. Chuck, you know, we're getting into the heyday of disaster movies. And you think Ned Beatty, you think he's prime to get cast in disaster movies, although he never really has.
No.
Except one, borderline one. He's in Gray Lady Down with Charlton Heston. He's got a really good role where he plays, you know, it's a smaller cast in a disaster movie. But he has a great
Heston role. Was really churning him out in that period, too.
He was. But he has a great role with David Carradine in that movie, and a good scene or two. I just remember that in Gray Lady Down in 1978. Now, right after that, he would almost steal Superman, Chuck. He's so good as Otis.
You know, here's what's interesting about the Otis character. There's naysayers who believe, you know, the character shouldn't exist in that movie.
I totally disagree.
Okay. I like him in that movie a lot. I think
he's the perfect comic. They needed that comic relief in that film.
I agree. It doesn't make Luther any less evil.
No, it doesn't. And that movie needed something where kids were going to laugh and be entertained. I mean, because if you look at that, there's a lot of adult overtones in that entire film.
Yeah.
That movie gives it the silliness it needs that are going to, you know, movie's almost 3 hours long. You want to make sure the kids
and he plays it fun.
Hell, he plays it really fun. And he actually would reprieve it again in Superman 2. He's in the opening scene very quickly, the escape scene, which is funny. I mean, Otisburg, I mean, that is just hysterical. Him and his candy apples. It's just funny stuff. Well done. 1941 he's in, Chuck, which I'm a fan of. I know a lot of people think it's loud and obnoxious, but he has a funny part in that film too, as the homeowner who holds a tank for the U.S. Army to just in case, you know, the Japanese come on the West Coast there, Chuck. And he's got some funny scenes in that, including the part where he actually gets to fire off the tank. And I think that movie's fun. I know it's loud and stupid, but who cares? It's got a great cast and some really funny scenes.
It has a lot of enjoyability, that movie. Yeah, I agree.
He's also in Hopscotch with Walter Matthau in 1980. In 81, he would do Superman 2. He'd pop up in The Incredible Shrinking Woman as well. Now, notice none of these movies, Chuck, he's the lead, right?
How many acting credits do you have?
He had a total of, believe it or not, it's hard to believe, 165 acting credits.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot. And again, never the lead, right? He's never the guy that's the star.
He didn't take any roles from Tom Cruise.
He did not. He would pop up in The Toy. I mean, he's not making great movies all the time either. He's in The Toy. He's in Stroker Ace. But it's low risk for him. He's never going to be remembered for these movies.
No, nobody's going to blame him for
nobody's ever going to play Net Bomb. But how about his great role? We're going to jump to 1986. And we've I think we might have talked about it last week. And the joke that your friend wrote, but as Dean Martin in Back to School, Look, yeah. he's got like three scenes in this movie, and his name alone elicits a laugh in the film.
Yes, yes.
But his scenes with Rodney Dangerfield are so funny.
I agree.
So
that movie, listen, that movie's a classic.
And right after that, he did another great movie, and that's The Big Easy, which I just watched again, Chuck, where he plays a Louisiana police chief and would-be stepdad to Dennis Quaid's character.
And you watch it?
I watched it on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
I don't talk about how big my TV is. I don't have to compensate for other things.
It's not 66 inches, is it?
See, it might be 65 and a half. But The Big Easy is a great film, and he's got a good Louisiana accent in that. Yeah. Very good movie.
Okay.
Chuck, do you remember The Fourth Protocol?
Vaguely.
Michael Caine and Pierce Brosnan?
I do remember
he
that.
He plays a Russian in that. Is actually, yeah. I thought maybe...
Michael Caine could churn him out too, huh?
Oh, boy. Jeez, you talk about Ned Beatty and Michael Caine. That talk about just being in film after film after film. Look, he really didn't do much more except working with Burt Reynolds a couple more times in Physical Evidence.
When did do Rudy?
Well, we're going to get to that. He was in Switching Channels with Burt Reynolds as well. Just movies
bad
like
movie.
The bad movies like The Unholy and After the Rain and Purple People Eater and Time Trackers and Tennessee Waltz. I mean, he'd pop up on BL Striker thanks to his buddy Burt Reynolds as well. And then he was
in Captain America, that awful 21st century Captain America?
I think he might have been.
He was saying Ronnie Cox is in that movie, right, too?
Ronnie Cox is in that. That's right. When was that? That was
the year after Batman. Here's the thing. Back in the day, right, it was no social media. So after 89, he started releasing posters in movie theaters with the big Captain America shield. And I was like, okay, when's it coming? When's it coming? It never came. And then, like 2 years later, it pops up on video, and I guess it was just unreleasable in theaters, and it had a good it actually had a good cast. Matt Salinger was Captain America, but it had a good supporting cast. It really did. It has no action. It has no money. There's no money involved.
No.
But Captain America as a franchise, I guess, survived it when the MCU took over. No,
I think it figured out a way to get it
right.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think they ended up landing on their feet.
Century productions.
And it came out eventually in 1990, Chuck. That's when it eventually came out after all that crap and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's when it came out. And then he had a recurring character as Ed Connor on that show on Roseanne too. You know, we talk about his TV work. He was on that quite a bit. And he was actually, from what I remember, he was a kind of a bastard on that show, right? He wasn't a really good, likable character on that.
Kelly Winters is on that show too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Radioland Murders, Replicate. I mean, Just Cause. These are not great movies in the mid-90s. But I'll tell you what great role he did get and was a really good show, and it's underrated. But the Baltimore cop drama, right? Homicide, Life on the Street. He was good on that. Do you remember Homicide with Yaphet Kotto?
Those shows were really good.
Yeah, 93 to 95.
I mean, listen, when you're in a show with Yaphet Kotto, you're in good company, right?
You definitely are. You definitely are.
Yeah.
And then, Rudy would come out. You wanted to talk about Rudy because that's another one of his signature roles.
It's one of his basic signature role, no
you
doubt.
You think? Yeah. Well, it is one of his must sees. There's no doubt about it.
And he should have been nominated for an Oscar in that movie. Was he?
1993. No. As a matter should of fact, have been. That film really doesn't get any.
When he said my eyes have never seen anything so beautiful, when he looks at the field for the first time. That movie's classic, Mike.
It really is. I love the scene when Rudy finally makes it to Notre Dame and he tells
Charles S. Stoughton.
Yeah. And then I like when he brings him the letter that he got accepted and he folds up the letter to get it back in the envelope because he knows he's going to want to end up keeping it.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, in that movie, he wasn't very supportive of Rudy chasing his dreams.
No, because nobody believed.
Nobody believed. And,
He didn't realize Rudy had the heart of a lion.
Nobody was going to stop Rudy. And his later years, he didn't do a lot of big work. His last movie, as a matter of fact, was Baggage Claim back in 2013, which I don't know if it even got released. But I will say one other role.
Was that Alicia Silverstone?
Baggage Claim?
Yeah.
Paula Patton's in it.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking it. Something similar back then. Okay, go ahead.
I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up his last great movie role, And I don't know if you'll agree or not, because you have no heart, no soul. So when an animated movie comes up, do you know what animated role I'm going to bring up about Ned Beatty and what he did?
No.
He's Lotso in Toy Story 3. He's the villain, the big teddy bear. You don't remember this, do you?
No.
He's the bad guy in Toy Story 3. And what a terrific job he did in that movie.
I'll take your word for it.
Come on. You've seen Toy Story 3.
No, I didn't. Not in the theater, though.
This is what I'm talking about. This is the these are the hurdles that I face people when I'm trying to host a show. Here's a guy that will watch Twister 87 times in a smoothie shop.
I will.
But won't recognize how great Toy Story 3 is.
Let's get this straight. The 65-inch 4K is in the ice cream parlor.
All right.
I have a smaller TV in the smoothie shop.
Well, here's what I want you to do. Can you throw Toy Story 3 on?
Okay.
Ice cream parlor. I think the people there would actually be more appreciative of something like that than Beyond the Poseidon Adventure. No,
I can't show Beyond the Poseidon Adventure because it's not on a streaming service that I have. I'd have to pay $2.99.
All right, Chuck. He would get three big nominees. One of them was Network Best Supporting Actor. Hear My Song, which came out in 1991. I know he got a lot of praise for that as a supporting actor in that. And he did a couple of TV and got some Emmy stuff. But Ned Beatty was definitely one of the great careers of all time.
I agree.
And, you know, it would be Network, Rudy, and Superman would be the three, right? And Deliverance, obviously.
And Deliverance.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, Chuck, that will wrap things up for this week. You did a wonderful job.
How'd I do this week? I do all right?
Yeah, but
I felt guilty. I got to be honest. I felt guilty last week, and I realized no Beyond the Poseidon Adventure until there was a guilt. I was guilty for almost a week until we did this. Thank you.
It's good to know. All right, we'll give you an extra star at the end of this.
Always a pleasure. And to the audience, thank you very much for listening.
Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Download one of our archived episodes. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Podcasts by Federated Media.